Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey folks, and welcome to Waypoint Radio episode 192. I wanted to add a spoiler warning up top here for the original Life is Strange. We spoil the whole game, so in case you don't want to be spoiled on that, make sure to give that one a skip. Okay, thanks, and here's the episode. Writing contemporary fiction, please, for the love of good dialogue, go talk to some real teens. You will soon discover they do not say things like, OMG, that was like, totes cray cray. They just don't. If you want your characters to talk like teenagers, then let them talk like teenagers. Not like some crackpot 80-year-old alien who has come to Earth and is attempting to masquerade as a teen. Unless you actually are writing a book about crackpot 80-year-old aliens who have come to Earth and are attempting to masquerade as teens, in which case that sounds amazing, and I applaud your genius. That was from Hannah Heath, in a piece called Writing Teenage Characters, What You're Doing Wrong. And this is, of course, Waypoint Radio, episode 192. I'm Danielle Riando, and joining me today are Natalie Watson.
Hi. I am a teen.
Oh, she's a teen. We've got a resident teen, Natalie Watson.
I'm the resident youth.
Resident youth and resident dad, Patrick Klepek.
Resident youth sounds like a shitty Resident Evil reboot that went in a truly millennial direction. Also, I think, you know, cray cray twice. I mean, everyone knows that if you're truly writing teens, it's cray cray cray. It's three crays. Like, I mean,
three
that's
crays.
Just fundamental.
It's the rule of threes, always.
Yeah. Miyamoto's school of threes. You have to say there are three forms to a boss battle and three crays for a teen.
That's right. That is correct. How it works. And of course, we're talking about teen dialogue today. And that was a blog post from a young adult fiction writer who writes books, but I think it applies to games as well. And we're talking about good teen dialogue in games today. Inspired, I think, at least for myself and for Patrick, by Life is Strange 2, which is out this week. I think the first episode came out this week, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. So we talked about that a little bit on Waypoint Radio on Monday, about the game, or at least you did, Patrick. I hadn't quite played it yet. I played a whole bunch of it on Monday, sort of later on, and really enjoyed it. And yeah, one thing that struck me was that the dialogue felt a lot more natural than it did in Life is Strange 1, but I am still a huge fan of Life is Strange 1, and also Before the Storm. Although, again, I feel like every time we mention Before the Storm, we do have to mention there were labor issues there, so putting that out there. But it does feel like the dialogue in this series has gone from a very heightened, almost 90s teen sitcom kind of like ridiculous, but I think it really works in a lot of ways, to like a slightly more natural, to a much more natural sort of flavor in Life is Strange too. So I want to ask you both what your Life is Strange history is. Patrick, I think we all know that you are a pretty big fan of the series. We've talked about those games a little bit. But Natalie, I do want to hear a little bit about your feelings. I know you haven't played the second one yet, but your feelings on the first one and sort of how it portrayed teens and teen dialogue.
I think the dialogue was really good in the context that, like, it was, you know, alluding to being in the 90s and, you know, you have to kind of like nudge, wink, wink a little bit harder than you might if it was taking place now. Like, you wouldn't.
Well, I think it actually was modern. I think it took place in like 2011 or something, 2012, maybe. I forget the exact year, but I always thought of it as if it was still like a 90s sitcom. Like it
had that tone. I see what you mean. I see what you mean. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Okay. I got really confused for a second.
Okay.
I was like, okay, I'm rolling with this. Did I totally misunderstand Life is Strange?
I think you're absolutely right that it like feels like a 90s kind of
piece. Yeah. 100%. 100%. Where you want to be contextual, you want to be like, hey, relatable to the kids, to the youth. But I don't think it was too corny, or if it was corny, it was like in that sitcom endearing way. I played Life is Strange a couple years ago, I think, and I had some weird feelings about the proposed endings of that game. I think it did lend itself to kind of what it feels like to be in love when you're a teenager, definitely, because when, as someone who was thought they were super in love at 18 and was like gonna get married to this person, which holy fuck, I'm so glad that did not happen.
I think we've all been there before.
Yeah.
It does feel like your whole world is kind of crashing down when you're faced with like a decision that is to be or not to be with this person. It does feel like kind of the whole world is just falling apart around you. So I feel like those kind of illusions were really strong. And especially, you know, thinking about queer love and My one qualm, I guess it is that I get sad when I see tragic lesbian love stories because they're tired and not wired sometimes. But I do think now that I'm kind of reflecting on it a little bit more that just like to signify like the weight of a teen relationship that it has on sort of your formations of the world and the way that you interact with the world around you and all that kind of stuff, like it it's pretty powerful in that way.
I think part of what made Life is Strange work is that as corny as the dialogue could be, it wasn't condescending. Like I think that's sort of like the key difference when you're talking about, even though, the shitty selfie lines and stuff like that, part of why it worked was because the tone that Life is Strange set for itself was that it was respectful of the stories it was telling and about, it didn't seem condescending. It didn't feel like it was like, haha, like those dang teens and like their catchphrases that I don't understand. Like it felt like for whatever faults it had, of which there were many, it always seemed to come from a place. I think we've used the term endearing over and over, and I think that fits because it came from a place of wanting to tell that kind of story despite whatever pitfalls it had along the way. It seemed like it came from a place of like it was trying. Trying is not always, and that's not an excuse for the things you get wrong. But I think it was trying to legitimately tell a story from that perspective. And as you mentioned, Danielle, the leap between one and two, I think shows like a lot of introspection on finding a way to do that even better a second time around.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first game worked so well because it was so heightened, because the stakes were, it's the end of the world. Choose between love and the end of the world, which I chose love, baby, like in a heartbeat,
wow.
I don't care.
Okay, sorry, Arcadia Bay.
It's funny because the very beginning of the second game, it's like, did you trash Arcadia Bay? Like they basically ask you like, did you make that renegade decision? And I was like, look, I don't like tragic lesbian love stories either. I want to have a happy story. So if that means the end of this crappy town, whatever. Okay,
yeah,
that was a little harsh.
The end of that of Life and Strange is shitty. Like the choice they, and Natalie alluded to this, but like, yeah, the choice they set up for you and the way that story can end is like those didn't have to be the two endings. Like there were other ways that they could have allowed you to have multiple outcomes based on where you wanted that relationship to go that doesn't have to end with, you know, the stereotypical, like, oh, turns out they love each other. Well, they're gay. That means one of them's got to die.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. That happens far too often in narratives. And like, it seems like they kind of fell into that trap largely because that's how stories often end. But they weren't putting enough consideration into, well, but this is how, like,
yeah, what
queer stories yeah. always mm-hmm. end, especially when they are often written by, you know, straight writers. And so it made that ending even more problematic. And
well, does that mean y'all sacrificed Chloe?
What did I do? I did both.
Okay.
So all I'm...
Right. I did save yeah, Arcadia Bay. I ended up saving Arcadia Bay, but ended up not feeling great about that being like my like it, because especially the way that ending plays out is it clearly is like meant to be like the canonical ending because like the budget goes into that that ending.
Yeah, the other ending is so like you just
get in a car and leave, whereas the other one gets like,
and you're sunset. Like you're like kind of fine, like you guys just seem fine, and I was you're like fine. I would not be fine right now. Like I would extremely not just be chilling, like listening to, I don't know, like Mumford and Sons, like running out of this town right now. Like I would be very upset.
Yeah. It's the fuck you, I'm gay ending is what it is. That's it how is. I've always interpreted it. Was like, you are saying fuck you to your crappy town and all these crappy people that kept you down. This might be a little bit of a, it hit me real hard in mm-hmm. a specific yeah. place coming from like a, I didn't grow up in a small town, but I grew up in Rhode Island and it is not the most happening place. I'm sorry, Rhode Islanders. I apologize to all of you if I've just thrown some shade on the state. There are okay things in Rhode Island, but like, not the most exciting place. Not the place I would have chosen to, you know, spend my life. So I very much, like, I had, in a heartbeat, no problem being like,
yeah,
fuck off. Yeah. Like, I'm good. I've got love. I've got what I need. Which, again, I know is the very, like, I may have been a very specific audience playing this
no,
game.
No, but, yeah, I think the idea, I mean, we had, you know, queerly, but you talked to Queerly Beloved, the Broadly podcast yeah. about chosen families a week ago or 2 weeks ago. Oh, what is time? And thinking of it in that sort of way of like, okay, I'm choosing to or seeing it as a chosen family kind of thing and seeing it as, you know, seeking out those who will support and who will reaffirm and celebrate like who you are. In that way there is like, you know, something to be said about choosing Chloe. But yeah, I wish what would have made that ending better for me is if that ending was fleshed out a little bit more
yeah.
and it
yeah.
wasn't, you know, just driving off, because there's so much unsaid and you know, also like, I don't know. Teens can make their, I don't know. If it was me at 18 and I destroyed
my
town.
Well, so you now, because you just had your 18th
also,
birthday.
Yes, I just turned 18, so thank you. So if it was me right now and I was given the choice, I mean, I know it's fantasy, whatever, but I would know that, like, in 5 years I would look back and be like, no, like... You know, who you know at 18, whoever you're in a relationship with at 18 is probably not going to be the person you spend the rest of your life with. And, oh God, I don't know. I'm just thinking about myself at 18 right now and just being like, why did you do this? Why were you like this? Why were you this way?
Well, that goes straight into one of my sort of main framing questions for the discussion today. Which is that I like genuinely hate a lot of teen media. I had like not the best teen years, which I, you know, who does, right? Well, I'm sure some people do. It was not the most awesome time for me. High school was a horrific experience for me. So I've really like, aside from like Daria and a couple of other, you know, like mm-hmm. shows about high school and how much it sucks and is terrible, I have like a real issue with a lot of like teen-focused media, or if not necessarily even for teens. I don't think Life is Strange is necessarily for teens specifically. Or
yeah, because it's like that's the question, right? It's like, is the teen media, like Life is Strange is teen media for adults,
right,
as opposed
to reflect on.
Yeah, it's meant like that's partially like why maybe you're able to excuse some of the dialogue, because it's like it's an adult reading, adults writing teen dialogue, as opposed to teen media aimed at teens, in which like they wouldn't put up with that shit. They would be able to tell the difference. And there's like a fundamental disconnect based on like who the ultimate audience is for. Like, Daria kind of worked both ways, right? Like Daria felt like aim, like you could empathize and as a teen with Daria's plight, like you could see yourself there. And then also as an adult, you can, I think Daria is one of the rare pieces of media that I think probably, you know, splits both ways.
Yeah, for sure. And it, like, it didn't hurt that, like, I was a teen exactly through Daria's run. I was, like, I think it started in 97 when I was 13 and then went through, like, 2002 when I was, like, 18. So it was, like, I was perfect, you know, like one-to-one kind of, like, with Daria, which was kind of funny.
Wasn't it part of that? It was part of that MTV, like, animation block, right?
It was.
Like, Ian Flock.
Yeah.
Ian Flux? Ian Flux? I can't remember. It was one of those shows that was also part of that.
And like the cartoon sushi stuff and Liquid TV stuff.
Yes.
It was so good. It was so awesome. It was like genuinely great. And you can go back now and like, okay, yeah, there's some stuff. But like I can still go back and really enjoy a lot of that stuff. But yeah, I have like a real problem with a lot of like teen media. Like just I don't understand the nostalgia. I just get mad. I just get like, why? Why do we put teens through this horrible gauntlet known as high school kind of thing? But Life is Strange super worked for me. It's one of those rare examples of something where like, no, I genuinely loved it, and I love the new game as well, and I'm kind of wondering, you know, why that is, and also how you folks felt about that. You don't have to talk about your high school experiences. I'm not gonna make you we don't have to go through therapy today on Waypoint Radio or anything, but I'm wondering if you both have kind of the same thing, or if you enjoy teen media, or if you have like a different relationship with it.
I love me some teen media.
Right, yeah.
I read a ton of young adult fiction when I was a little too young, and then also like into I probably started reading like young adult fiction when I was like around like 8 or 10.
Okay. Yeah.
I remember, and then I read it up until probably I was like 14 or 15. But then I watch like a lot of TV shows. And it's funny because reading and watching young adult stuff, I think watching especially was hard because all of the actors are obviously not teens.
They're 32.
Like, they are very old. And so I was constantly like looking up to these people who were like supposed to be my age or supposed to be just a couple years older than me. And so that was weird because there always felt like a disconnect for me. It wasn't like, of course this isn't relatable because these are like beautiful like actors that are like 26 playing like a 16-year-old. And so that like
The Hills, kind of, right? Like that was like one of the quintessential, also an MTV show.
I'm thinking the OC and
Gossip
Girl.
All right.
Gossip Girl and the OC were really big for me as a teen, unfortunately.
Hey, Gossip Girl is all right.
You know, on a rewatch, I've been meaning to rewatch it, and it's just like it's the most messy. Everyone is so messy and bad, but it is really entertaining. It's very
I think the messiness was part of the appeal of Gossip Girl.
Yeah, 100%.
But like Veronica Mars, is that in there anywhere? Or?
Veronica Mars was a little bit before me.
Gotcha. All right, I'm sorry. I'm showing my age here. Apologies.
It's okay.
Also, like Gossip Girl was like the quintessential. Like, what high school is this? Where is everyone having the threesomes? Like, what?
Yeah,
high,
I know.
What?
Well, like, I don't know. That's high school was pretty crazy.
I mean, it's like those parties like were happening, but it's like shows like Gossip Girl and stuff like that suggested like, well, if you aren't at those parties, like, they're just around the corner. Like, you know, like.
Every other house on the block, you know.
Yeah, my idea of, like, New York private schools were, like, wow, this just must be, like, constantly glamorous. It was, like, more like the glamour. Like, the sex and drugs and stuff, like, I don't know. There was a lot of like, that in the L.A. private school scene that I attended, and it was a lot, but the glamour of, like, yeah, we're gonna wear Chanel to go to the party, or, like, we're gonna, like, that was just, like, so out of this world to me, and that's what made it, like, such a fantasy thing. It was, like, just, like, the presentation rather than, like, the actual acts that were going down. But yeah, I think that in terms of, like, reading, that's where I felt like I could relate much more, because I felt like we were just, I could, you know, think of anyone in my head, and they could be, they could look just like me, or they could, you know, be at least my age and look like my age. And that's what made them feel like they were talking like my age even more. Especially in, like, the sort of, like, more confessional style, like the non third person, like the first person books that I read that felt like I was just being talked to as, like, the reader, and that we were having, like, this back and forth. That's what felt like the most, I'm here with you too, and we are the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that as, like, it's a companion through your, you know, potentially difficult formative years, you know.
Totally.
Like,
totally.
Let me help you. How about you, Patrick? What's kind of your feelings on teen media in general, especially if, you know, when you were younger and growing up through this stuff?
I didn't have a lot of experience when I was younger. Maybe rare exception, but, like, high school was pretty fine for me. I was lucky enough to have the same group of friends that I had known, like, kind of around the block, and that was, like, my core, you know, people come and go, your group expands and contracts, but, like, I generally had, like, a really stable group of friends to go through, so those, the tough, like, sort of years in high school, and so, I mean, obviously there were ups and downs, but I wasn't looking for, often feels like a lot of teen media is escapist in nature, and I wasn't as looking for that as much in high school. It was actually, like, probably more of the times that I was looking for sort of escapist media happened in earlier years before. I was a lot more awkward and introverted in like middle school. Middle school was probably a rougher couple of years than high school was for me. And, like, that was, like, unsurprisingly the years that, like, I was deep into things like The X-Files and looking, which I would not call The X-Files teen media necessarily. but, like, that became sort of my escape, was, like, to read about monsters and aliens and grand conspiracies, because you know, my actual life was, like, much more boring and mundane. And maybe that's part of it, was, like, there wasn't as much going on in my sort of, like, day-to-day normal life was pretty stable. And so I often found myself drifting to sci-fi and fantasy, because it was stranger and wilder, and there was more to kind of let your imagination go. Of course, then as I got older, I guess in high school, I got into the Harry Potter series, and that became something that I stuck with. The last book didn't come out until a couple of years after I was out of college, and I was still going to, you know, midnight showing or midnight sales at Borders and stuff like that to pick up my copy of the book. So Harry
Potter.
Did
you dress up?
I don't remember. I don't think so. I wouldn't have been against it, but it was not. I was the only one that was reading Harry Potter in my friend group. I'll say that much. So I'm not sure who I would have dressed up with if I had wanted to. Yeah, Harry Potter was probably one of my singular obsessions outside of video games in high school. And certainly there was a lot of young to teen speak happening in the Harry Potter series. And that said, that was also one that was aimed at, you know, that was one that was enjoyed by adults, but was clearly aimed at kids and teenagers.
Like, teen speak in the Harry
Potter?
Well,
I mean, eventually, I guess they sort of, it's weird because Harry Potter basically kind of jumps from kids to adults, right? Like, they don't really go, like, I mean, there are horny phases in Harry Potter, right? During, like, the Order of the Phoenix era.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've read those books, so I'm and the movies gloss over a lot of that stuff. But
yeah.
Yeah, they don't really spend a lot of time in like the Harry Potter and Hermione and Ron and all of them being teenagers. They kind of just jump from being kids then. Oh no.
Yeah.
Voldemort. I guess time to be adults.
yeah. It's funny because what made me like relate to them at the ages that I read their books, the books and at the ages that they were supposed to be in the book was how they were like feeling more than kind of like the dialogue, like the actual like taxonomy of the dialogue itself, like rather than having some sort of like they're saying rad and I say rad, or you know, it's more like the issues that they're dealing with, or like the sort of like the way that they relate to each other and things like that made them feel much more relatable to me than them like kind of nodding at me with some like teen speak, I guess.
Did either of you do the Hunger Games books or I guess I'm really only familiar with the movies, but I'm just curious if those books kind of hit you.
That was too late for like by the time, because that was what, like a little after Harry Potter that Hunger Games. I mean,
yeah,
the books.
It was like 2010, 2011, I want to say. It was like when those were kind of starting.
Yeah, at that point, I had sort of. All I knew about the Hunger Games was like, it was super popular amongst like kids, and it didn't strike me as, oh, because I liked Harry Potter, I'd probably like The Hunger Games. I was at that point sort of, I basically dismissed The Hunger Games. But ended up, you know, sort of liking the movies. I only saw the first two, I think. But yeah, The Hunger Games kind of went past me.
Yeah, I think I read the first two. I remember the first one was a required reading, summer reading for my entire school.
Good.
Because
your school was about to participate in The Hunger Games.
That's right.
Yes. We had a Hunger Games day. I think, okay, there was one girl that went to my school that was in the movies.
Okay.
And I think my school just ran with that after she like got cast. They were like, all right, we're the Hunger Games school now.
I'm trying to remember. Like... There's an actress that came from our school. She's well known. What was she in? Once Upon a Time? What was that ABC show?
She, wow. Mine was... the fox girl.
Oh yeah,
with the red hair. Yeah.
Okay. All
Jennifer
right.
Morrison. She was in House. Cool. She was Once Upon a Time.
Jennifer.
If you look her up, you probably.
Oh,
know.
I know her. I know her. Yes.
My wife has a complicated. She won't let me watch Jennifer Morrison TV series. Jennifer Morrison. Jennifer Morrison was mean to her on a high school production of a play. Do not tell her that I mentioned this story. I'll get punched in the arm.
No one tell her.
It's a good thing to say no one tell her publicly as well.
Wow.
And so then I would just leave on episodes of House when she would like, when we first started dating, she would like come visit me at college, and I would just have an episode of House on in the background, just knowing that she would walk in and get extremely upset that Jennifer was
just leave it on for Pixel.
Yeah.
That's extremely good. Kind of love that.
Twilight was really big for me.
Okay. All right.
That was like kind of like the novels of my generation. Twilight, we were the Twilight generation. That's what defined us.
All right. As part of the Buffy generation, I always had I had major issues with the Twilight stuff.
You know?
I was always so upset. I was like, we have, you know, it's not perfect, but we've got some female empowerment and good queer characters and all this good shit, and then we went backwards. I'm sorry. I could... Oh,
it was bad.
I have problems.
Twilight, most messy, problematic trash, I will say.
I mean, it's also because, like, when you're at that age, you're at your... You don't have the critical eye for that stuff, right? So, like, the reason the reason you end up being drawn to works that you know, would later consider... you know, problematic or just bad. Like you don't have, you know, you're not supposed to, right? Like that's the teen media, like, is, you know, largely pulls on emotion and situations and relationships and mm-hmm. and like situational context. And like, you know, that's of course Twilight is appealing then, right? Like it's a big romantic adventure. Like that is the appeal of that. It is, you know, it's appealing to the horniness of teens, and it's like that if there was one constant, the teens
Jacob
are horny.
Jacob was really hot, you know.
He was really hot. He was hot. Jacob was hot. Kristen, what's her name? Bella. Bella was hot. Kristen's hot. Bella was hot. Everyone was just hot. Everyone. The dad was hot.
The dad was even hot. It's true.
Everyone was hot in that book.
Yeah.
And then they did the movie. I recently saw an article, just speaking of Twilight really quick, that the director was... like tried to cast like a more diverse cast, like wanted to cast Alice as like Eastern Asian and wanted to like have a much more diverse cast, and Stephenie Meyer was like no, and like would not, was like they're all white, like everyone has to be white, and she like gave her the one black vampire, which just
that's
Stephenie Meyer,
that's telling a little bit about
it tells a lot,
Ms. Meyer.
But, you know, props to that director that, well, I don't know. I would say props, but.
Gave it a shot.
Gave it a shot.
Definitely. Yeah. Fair. Very fair. I'm sorry if I threw shade on you there, Natalie, for liking Twilight. I apologize.
Oh, I
be
accept
so judgy.
The shade.
Well,
no, I think
we probably
it.
All have stuff like that, right? Like, I mean, Buffy, like, despite its, you know, I think, you know, now it is looked back as having some, you know. Yes, it had empowerment elements, and it's better than a lot of the available media. But, you know, Buffy's not without its problems. Joss Whedon, you know, problematic fave at best.
Problematic fave. Everybody's favorite problematic fave, Joss Whedon. Yeah, very, very much so. 100%. I will take a knee and say I too, was a dumb teen. Absolutely. 100%.
Shame.
Shame to all of us.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I want to bring it back a little bit to Life is Strange. And Life is Strange 2, which I know Patrick and I have been playing and enjoying quite a bit. We did talk about this a tiny bit on Monday, but I want to kind of, you know, reframe it in terms of, okay, Life is Strange 1, extremely cheesy, but extremely works. Life is Strange 2 does not feel cheesy almost at all, it seems. Like, this actually feels like a pretty, you know... I don't want to say not cheesy at all. That's not entirely.
Yeah, it's still
cheesy.
Like schmaltzy. Yeah. Like I'm trying to think of the you know, it's still melodramatic.
Yes.
But feels more grounded and authentic in a way that the original did not. Like the kids in the lines of dialogue you hear from like the brothers feels far more in line with what you might actually hear. I mean, it's still in. The Life is Strange exaggerated tone, but definitely even within that context, it feels it reads a lot better than the first one did.
Yeah. Or a lot more like, oh, I could see this as a believable scene. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. And also the teen dialogue. It is something you mentioned again on Monday, but I noticed really, really strongly the sort of inter-teen dialogue actually seemed a lot more natural and really, really fun. The interplay between the older brother and his friend I thought it was like wonderful. And I really liked how, you know, there's conversations through the cell phone that actually seem to make sense. Like, it's like, yeah, this is a 16-year-old boy. This is how he would, you know, when he talks to his boss, he's just like, hey, boss, gonna be late. Like, you know, these three-word exchanges. And then the boss kind of has a whole like, oh, blah, 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 blah. You know, like, let me try to connect with my young worker. And he's just kind of like, yeah, it's fine, whatever. And then, of course, the way he tries to talk to this girl that he likes, you know, and he's trying to get his female friend, like, to actually help him, like, have a little bit of game or help him kind of, you know, actually talk to her like a human being, is really cute and really well done. And Natalie just, I got to call this one out. Natalie just put in our chat, I almost just drank Ancient Soylent, which,
I
teen almost... move. That would be a teen move right there.
Oh, yeah, got to go to the party and drink some Ancient Soylent. Spin the bottle. Wherever it lands, you got to drink that Ancient Soylent.
Ancient bottle.
I had a bottle of Soylent on my desk, and I thought it was the one that I pulled out from this morning, and I was, like, tipping it back, and it was, like, taking a long time to reach my mouth. And then I was like, And then I looked down, and it just solidified at the bottom. And I was like, holy shit.
Wow. What a teen. What a teen.
What a teen.
Such a teen move, am I right? Leaving old Soylent on your desk? Hashtag relatable. Oh, that was almost the worst thing that could have happened on this podcast. Just projectile.
Natalie just throwing up in front of
oh
us.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay. That was worth addressing, I think. That was, you know, that was a very teen move. I wanted to ask the room if folks had other sort of really good examples or even like comically bad. I consider that good in some level. Of other games that actually kind of really got teen dialogue well or made you feel at least like, okay, here's a relatable character.
Totally.
Yes.
I would say Donut County is like teen speak, but it's like internet talk, which I remember when I met Ben Esposito, the developer, at E3, and I was playing Donut County for the first time, I was like so impressed by the dialogue and was like, I'm so happy you did this. And he was like, yeah, I mean, it's just like how we talk, like on the internet, like that is it. And I'm paraphrasing obviously, but that was like something that made me so happy, just to like feel like, you know, this, the way that we talk online can be translated like into game form without it being like super cheesy, or that it just like is that endearing feeling of like being able to recognize like that sort of thing, like the weird capitals and everything like that. It was just, that was like kind of my standout when I was thinking about this topic.
Even the sort of animation supports that so well. Like the like sassy raccoon, the way he just kind of like lies down and he's just texting. It's just very, it like supports that as well. Like just like a casual way you talk to your friends kind of thing.
Totally, totally.
And the duck. It was a duck, right? That you could just put like duck emojis.
It was a goose.
It was a goose. I'm sorry.
Goose.
Duck, duck, goose.
It was apologies to all the ducks out there.
Apologies to the ducks.
I'm sorry to all ducks, all Soylent, all Twilight fans. I got a lot of apologies today. How about you, Patrick? Are there games that you felt, you know, got young adult or teens pretty well in terms of dialogue or even just characterization?
Night in the Woods is probably the one that really sticks out from the last couple of years. Night in the Woods probably has like the best translation of talking online to a video game, it felt just very naturalistic. It managed to translate the way kind of kids talk to each other. I can't remember what the exact ages that, you know, I think they're young adults, like they may be, you know,
19, late, maybe 18.
Teens about to leave their, but definitely, you know, young and extremely online sorts of people. And I thought that Night in the Woods managed to convey that in a way that didn't feel forced at all. It felt like it was like trying to capture a very specific type of speaking, a certain rhythm, a certain set of relationships that people have when they feel comfortable with one another. And I was just deeply impressed with that game's ability to translate something that you largely see on, like, I guess it's more Tumblr than Twitter speak, but they managed to get that into a game, and it didn't feel like, haha, like I read some Tumblr and I copied and pasted a meme. It was like, no, like Night in the Woods, like captured like a way of speaking and turned that into its and infused its dialogue with that, as opposed to just grabbing something and putting it in so you could say, you know, that you'd done your homework. And then Gone Home, another great example of writing that
totally
that captures, you know, what it felt like to be a certain age. And I guess the thing I would ask anyone here is, like, I think it's actually easy to find examples of this in, like, smaller independent games. You know, I think Life is Strange, part of the reason that it's captured people is because it has a real budget. It's a AAA game. Like, as much as I think we all appreciate independent games and what they bring and the kinds of themes that they touch on that bigger games don't. There still is always this kind of desire to see that stuff realized with enormous production values. And I think that has been part of why Life is Strange has resonated, is because Life is Strange easily could have just been a text adventure or, you know, a real low budget indie game. But there was something deeply satisfying about seeing that stuff represented with, like, a huge budget, or at least a budget bigger than we're used to. And so, but I'm having trouble thinking of games at a certain scale that managed to pull that stuff off. Like, I was actually just, like, trying to Google, it was like, video games with teens. And it's like, like, anything that comes up, or like people talking about, like, Night in the Woods or Gone Home, and not a whole lot of stuff, or Life is Strange, and not a whole lot of stuff that, you know, you would see in, like, an Assassin's Creed or anything at that scale.
Yeah, I think the one example that came up for me when I was kind of trying to think of these at a large budget, because again, yeah, Night in the Woods, completely, Gone Home was going to be like the one where I was like, the sterling example of good teen dialogue.
Right.
Last of Us, actually, Left Behind, the DLC.
Oh, I still need to play that. I just don't. I know.
It's good.
I know. I've heard. It's someone that really liked Last of Us and have heard that Left Behind is like just a wonderful sort of side story. I'm mad that I have not played that yet.
Yeah, it's really good, you know, whenever you get a chance. Obviously, it's only a couple hours long, but it's, I think it's the best part of Last of Us so far. And yeah, it felt very much like two young ladies having an adventure together. They both, you know, maybe they like each other. There's that whole part. All of this is so gay, I realize. Like, every time I'm, like, talking about, like, good teen dialogue, I'm like, wow, it's really gay, too. So, you know, this is what I consider good, right? But they have really wonderful banter together. They have this really cute adventure. I'll just shout out, like, one moment of it. They go to, like, you know, they're in a mall, basically. They're sort of spelunking in an ancient mall, you know, the two of them. And they find a Halloween store. And they have this just amazing banter in this, like, Halloween store with Halloween decorations and all sorts of goofy stuff. And, yeah, it feels very natural. Feels very of a piece with, like, slightly awkward teens, but who are kind of having fun together and figuring out sort of what their feelings are for each other. So that one, that's probably it's one of the only really good examples I can think of at, like, that budget, like, that level of sort of AAA. Natalie, I don't know if you have any examples there.
At the AAA level? I don't think so, because I don't, like, if there's a teen character, they're there because they're a teen. I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're just meant to be that teenager. Like, they're meant to be the stereotypical, like, what Hannah Heath talks about in her blog post, that, you know, generalizing the teenage experience, and that you, when you put a teen into a narrative, it is, they are meant to be there as, like, the angsty or the, like, whatever the generalization you want to make about teenagers is. And so for, yeah, I don't think that, like, a lot of games have taken time to kind of flesh out more than just they're there as that narrative device. I'm having a really hard time thinking of one, but I'm open to suggestions.
I mean, that may speak to, like, the fact that we have to scratch our heads so much, you know, speaks to the, sort of lack of representation of, like, teens or young adults or people who are not murderous adults.
More teens in games.
I mean, then there may be a through line there in that a lot of AAA games involve violence, and it would feel far more uncomfortable to put violence in the hands of teenagers and kids as opposed to adults. And so if most of our AAA games are dealing in and, you know, surrounding surrounded by and participating in violence, you know, not shocking that as a result, you know, you have functionally less, you know, kids and teenagers and other people that can speak to broader experiences.
Yeah, agreed. AAA devs, you know, get some good teens in there. Get some good teen writing. You know what I'm saying? My last question, I guess, is really, well, I it's kind of a two-parter for this, and then we can move on to a letter and kind of go on. But two-parter being, why are teens so hard to write? And is it easier to write teens in sort of the moment where you were a teen? I'm thinking again of like, okay, games that take place in the 90s where the writers themselves, you know, something like Gone Home, where the writers themselves were teens in the 90s and can kind of draw from that experience. Is it extra hard, I wonder, to like write teens now, especially if you don't have like a teenager in your life, like a teen, you know, a teen cousin or a teen, you know, somebody you actually interact with on a daily basis? Like, is that just like one of the main challenges of sort of writing a good teen, I wonder?
I think it's super hard because I am a teen or was just a teen. And I don't know what the fuck is cool with teens. Like, I was just there. It's been 4 years since I... 3, 4.
It's been 40 years for me.
It's been... it's been not very long since I was a teen. And I don't know what is cool about teens at all. Like, I don't know, like... how to be cool with a teen. I would be such an old fogey if I tried to be a teen. So I think it is hard because like you said earlier, Patrick, like they're quick to like cipher out. And it also depends. Are you writing for adults? Or are you writing teens for teens or teens for adults? Because I think if it's teens for adults, you can kind of get away with a little bit more because we can kind of like, there's almost like, a kind of like ha ha, like a it's like can be kind of cheeky, or you kind of like laugh at it,
or like a Riverdale, right? Like that's teens for adults.
Yeah, totally. But teens for teens, I think, happens less often in games, and I think that is because like teens would just be over it. The teens would not,
or would see through it, right? Like
exactly. You
know, and it may be that they're getting their that those outlets are different these days, right? Like, you know, that's they look at, you know, YouTube and all sorts of other social networks where, you know, maybe those expressions, those indulgences are happening in places that aren't the kinds of media that we're, that, you know, like folks like us are interested in. You know, there's just more going on in different places. That said, like, I don't think you have to have a teen to understand. I mean, things like YouTube, like if you want to see what people are doing and saying, like, it is actually, you actually have never been in a time where you can find more ready access to just like observe what people are doing. Now, granted, you know, what folks are doing on YouTube can be like very polished up versions, but you don't have to dig very far to find the not million viewer person who is just uploading, you know, video vlogs of themselves explaining what their life is like. There's a movie that came out recently that was written by a popular YouTuber about teens and vlogging. It's eighth grade. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard it is fantastic. It was written by someone who grew up becoming a viral YouTube star doing music and comedy, and then wrote a story about a teenager who isn't someone with a million viewers on YouTube. They're just vlogs. Huh?
There we go.
Bo Burnham.
Yes, Bo Burnham. It makes videos for herself and her friends, and she's having trouble fitting in. And I'm anxious to watch it. It just went up on iTunes, like, because I've heard just really, really tremendous things about it. And crucially, part of what apparently makes that movie work is that they didn't cast teen actors. They cast teens that they could mold into actors, and apparently it lends like a really interesting authenticity to the film because it's trying to tell. It's not a story of teens for adults. It's one of those that's functioning on both levels, but it achieves that authenticity by casting kids that would know, be able to see through the bullshit. And so, I actually think there is. If you want, you know, if you want to understand how they're talking, I think there is both media, like an eighth grade type movie, or just go on YouTube. Like, you can find authentic voices out there that will give you some inkling of what's happening. And that's probably, honestly, that's probably easier to glean stuff from there than it would be actually talking to a teenager, because your inability to relate is probably going to help, you know, outside of like being able to talk to a teenager that you know really well, or maybe is your own kid, to hear them talk authentically is probably, that's going to be difficult when an adult is in the room.
Yeah, totally.
For sure. For sure. Awesome. Let's go to the question bucket. We've got one question today that I really loved. I love when I get to pick the questions. It makes me very happy. All right. I don't think they actually put an address on this, but I'll check in case it's in the show notes. I can throw that in. Hello, Waypoint fam. Congrats on 200 episodes. Editorial note, this is episode 192, but I think we have more than 200 just because of how many things are going in the feed. Anyway, I wrote in on episode 100 and asked what topic you would cover in an educational Twine game. And baby, I'm back to ask you another hypothetical make a game question. If you were going to make an immersive sim loosely based on your own life, what would you use as your main location, and what kinds of narrative collectibles will be scattered about? Here's to the next 100 episodes. Oh, love immersive sims. I'll start.
Okay, go.
I feel like you've been waiting for this question your whole life, Danielle.
I could go in many directions, but the one I think would be the most interesting, possibly, for other people to play would be sort of ambulance-based. I would have, like, an immersive sim where you're an EMT and you have all these different, you know, tools in your toolbox to solve various problems. But I would definitely have a lot of audio logs and definitely have a lot of, like, notes you could find. But I think it would be cute and it would be kind of fun to have them be, like, little radios. We use radios on our truck, and so like if you had like a little radio in each one that you find, a different like patient's location would have like another little story about that patient, maybe a little backstory about them, how they came to the condition that they have, that sort of thing. Because that would tie into the gameplay really nicely if it's like, okay, you're doing diagnostic stuff and you're doing like medical procedures on somebody, but you have this little radio that talks about, hey, the barbecue they went to with their son the other week, or, you know, the baseball game they went to, or what. These are all very all-American things, I guess, that I'm, like, imagining. but, yeah, I think that would be super fun. And, of course, I would have a lot of immersive systems. Oh, this would be really fun. Maybe I'll make this game one day when my Unity skills are up to par in, like, 2028. We'll see.
I'd play that game.
It'd be fun, right?
Hell yeah.
Natalie, do you have an immersive sim? Collectible.
Patrick, do you have one? I think I'm stumped.
Yeah, I do. I just do poorly on these questions that are like, "What's the game that you want?" maybe in part, I think it's probably reflective of that. I never want to be a game designer because I'm just terrible at answering these questions. Which I let someone else make it, and I'll be surprised.
There you go. Jessica can make the game.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, but she's already shown far more creativity in that realm in 2 years than I've shown.
I've seen those drawings. They look really good.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's the collectible Jessica drawings. You know.
Aww. Yeah. Yeah.
That'd
there you
be
go.
Cute, right.
Scatter those. Well, they're already scattered among my house, so I feel like most of my day is spent finding whatever she grapes or whatever she has eaten, and then hit around the house for me to find.
So it's my
immersive sim is me just cleaning up after my kid. And the collectibles are me finding almonds and grapes and bowls of yogurt half eaten stuffed under things. And then the game is like, she recently started sleeping in like a big girl's bed. We had a crib that you could take off certain pieces, and then it'll sit on the ground, and you can put a proper mattress in it. And then we've been, just because she turned 2, is around the age when you should really start thinking about getting the pacifier taken away. And we weren't willing. There are different ways you can handle that. Like when my wife was a kid, the way her parents were, the family was moving, and so they told her the pacifiers have to stay at the old house. Like, that's just the way it is. And that's how
they got... Oh,
they
were going to say that the pacifiers got lost.
No. That's... Well, no, because you could just go buy another one. They said, no, they have to stay at the old house. And for some reason, she bought that. That's like, to me, that seems like a flimsy-ass excuse, like, that I can't have the pacifier. And so for us, like, when we switched the... We were telling her, oh, it's the big girl bed. And we made the decision. I was up the first day that... I only say I because I was up the first morning that someone had to make the ultimate call on whether we were going to follow through on it was... when she got up and she had her pacifiers to go to bed, I said, oh, well, you're a big girl now, sleeping in the big girl bed, and big girls leave their pacifiers in the bed. And so then she leaves them in the bed, and she was very good about it. She said it there. She understood. I'm a big girl. And so she leaves it in the bed, and she only gets it when she goes to sleep. That said, there are pacifiers hidden all over my goddamn house that have been stuffed into different places. And then when she finds them, I can't really tell her no, because she... discovered a bonus, a treasure, like Jessica
Klubik's collectible.
Jessica Rose Klubik's, immersive sim is like, can she search around the house to find a pacifier that she's allowed to have because it wasn't the ones that I told her to keep in the bed? And so maybe that's my immersive sim, is like her wandering the house looking for the lone pacifier that maybe was stuffed underneath something after she was told that she's a big girl now. She's supposed to leave it in her goddamn bed.
That's extremely good and cute.
That's so cute. I tried to stretch that out
so I could give you more time, Natalie.
I know. I appreciate it. I really do appreciate it. I'm trying to think of like one place that, because the key to an immersive sim is like having a contained space. And I'm trying to think of like a contained space that I spent a lot of time in. I guess it would be like my house growing up, because I lived in the same house until I moved to New York. And my collectibles, I don't know.
It's not ancient.
Or
soil
maybe.
Right.
It's sure. I hope to dear
that
God
you
it's
left
not ancient
somewhere.
Soil. It is not. I think actually my immersive sim would be three houses. It would be me and my two best friends from home's houses. And the collectible would be finding my clothes that my friends have stolen from me at their houses, because we have this really bad problem in our friend group of us taking each other's clothes. I never do it, first of all. I would like to say that I'm exempt from the sins. But taking clothes and losing them in the black hole that is their houses. I've lost like earrings that I put down the night before and then like woken up and they're just gone. I've lost so many things at these two girls' houses. And every time I go over there, I go through their closets to find my old shit. So I think that would be my immersive sim, is getting my shit back from my shitty friends. Just kidding. They're not
great title for a game too. Get your shit back.
Get your shit back.
Subtitle, from your shitty friends.
Exactly.
That's so good. See? Y'all are perfect and creative. Those were great games.
Thank you.
Very excited.
I want to play your guys' games more than I want to play mine. Mine sounds stressful.
I want to play all of them. I think they all sound pretty
awesome.
Mine
would be in VR, and it would be like the full room stuff, and you have to crawl on the ground in order to...
She's my queen. I love her.
The little crawl. Is she doing the like assisted walk stuff? At this point,
no,
like,
she can fully. She's been walking since 9 months. That fucking monster.
She is more powerful than any of us will
she's
ever be.
Far too powerful.
She's so strong. I love her.
She started walking at 9 months, and the steps that she took, I cried a little bit when she walked, and then the tears turned from happiness to profound sadness at realizing how much my life was about to change. Because then not the same week as she figured out walking, she figured out how to climb up and down stairs. And it was just like, ugh. Just,
oh, my God. She's on
I wanted to just start pushing her. Like, just fall on the ground. Like, don't figure out this walking thing. I was like, I know you can do it. So I'm glad that, like, your motor skills are advancing in a way that shows, you know, we don't have anything to worry about. But, like, what if you did it 6 months from now? So just what if I just, like, kind of just like
slow it down.
Just like, oh, you fell. What if you just stayed down
Jessica.
There?
Keep going. You will be stronger.
Maybe there's a pacifier on the floor. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe if you stayed on the ground. Just crawl. She does this thing now where she I made a crack about at some point a week or two. Is like, well, oh, like you're a baby, you're a baby, and I was making fun of her, like, cause like, oh, you're a big girl now. But then now she'll come out. She's like, I want to be the baby, and then like I'll like have to cradle her and rock her, and she'll be like, I'm a baby, and I'm like, no, you're a big girl. It's like, I'm a baby. I'm
like, okay. I remember my baby cousin doing that. He was like, I want to be a baby again, and then he would just like ask to be picked up and yep. stuff. We're all like, no, you're like five. You like can't do the shit anymore.
3 years from now, if I'm still in the same position, I'll keep that in mind.
Aw. That's very cute and good. I like how we talked about teens and then also toddlers. It's like,
damn, Jessica yeah. feels like a teen at this point anyway. So God help me 10 years from now.
She's very advanced. Wait. Yeah, advanced teen toddler. It's very good.
Oh, I want to play that.
Why? Well, yeah, walks at 9 months is a teen at three. That's basically what I feel like my life's gonna be.
God, Dad.
Oh my God.
Well,
Patrick.
She repeats everything now, and so we've fortunately been lucky enough, no swears, like we kind of tamped that out. I'm sure it'll happen, but we try to be mindful of it. But my dog got kennel cough a couple of weeks back, and this medicine we were giving her is this like grotesque slime purple thing. It's horrifying. And the first time we kind of fumbled giving it to my dog, and she kind of like cough and spit some of it out, and it went everywhere. And my wife just like jokingly is going like, oh my God, oh my God. And then we hear around the corner, Jessica walks in the room going, oh my God, oh my God. And we're laughing, but we're looking away. Cause like the moment we laugh, then she's going to be saying it the rest of the day. Yep. I did not need the rest of my day to be, oh my God, oh my God.
True teen.
So good. True teen. She's such a teen. I love
True
her.
True teen.
True teen.
Anyway, those are, that's dad corner.
No, it's, I love, I
dad
love
corner.
It.
Oh my
you
God.
You came on as the official dad today, so.
It's true.
You know.
Yeah, that was your job.
It was really Thank good. You. Highly relevant. And if you're a teen and you have a question, you can send questions to gaming@vice.com with a subject question. Shout outs. I think we're still using Bowen, but if we're not, let's say shout outs to Bowen and Mello. I still have it in the show notes. Bowen letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. And just in case we're using the new one, I'm going to say this as well. Thank you so much to Mello. I think that's To Mello on Twitter. And we will.
To Mello Makes.
Sure. To Mello Makes. Sorry. To Mello Makes on Twitter. Thank you. We'll add that to that show notes. But either way, one of those two tracks is going to be playing, and it's going to be great and awesome. And thank you to those folks for making those. We're on Twitter at Waypoint. We're on Facebook at Waypoint Vice. We're on YouTube at Waypoint Vice. We're on twitch.tv/Waypoint. And, of course, everything we write is on waypoint.vice.com. I might have just said everything we white, which is very teen toddler of me as well. Natalie, where can we find you online?
You can find me at Natalie Watson, and you can actually find Mello at Mello Makes.
Perfect.
So I messed that up.
Thank
Sorry.
You. No, it's all good. I appreciate it. Thank you for the at Mello Makes. Patrick, where can we find you online?
You can find me at Patrick Lovett.
Awesome. You can find me at Danielle R.I. And as always, I wish you all a good weekend, and to be good and be good at it.
Oh my God.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.